It's November. I know it's 2022. I'm trying to remember what the date is. November 20th. November 20th, 2022. 1635, 36 now. 1636 hours. Ward Green here. I have a lot of stuff that I could report on, and the Insol saga continues. I hope you're enjoying that, because it's going to continue, because it's so important to have the feet fit right in the shoes. And what happened was the Danners became too tight. I suddenly realized they were too tight because I had two pairs of insoles, and either my feet swelled up or something happened, but even the next day they're still too tight. So that I can't figure out, but I realize now that there's a problem when the toes don't have enough room. Not just the toes, but all of the part of the foot that's in front of the ball of the foot, everything there, that needs to have a little bit of movement. And I just wasn't, they felt really comfortable for a long time, but then they started to be not so comfortable. So eventually, I think when they're broken in, I'll probably be able to put two pairs of insoles in them again. That's what I think. But right now I can't. So the only pair that I have that's thick enough that I can put one pair of insoles, and I have no other combinations that work. No, there's no other way that I can get two insoles in there, so I have to use one insole only. And the thickest one I have is the one that works the best, which is the Sole, S-O-L-E brand. The Sole brand, and it's the wide, thick, which is in color, it's black, but it's called wide thick. And that one is really jammed in there, perfectly fits in my Danner boot, and my feet have a little bit, maybe a little bit too much room, possibly, but the heel is great, though. There's no slipping or anything. It's just that, there's possibly a little bit too much room in the toe areas. And there's nothing I can do about it unless I get another thin insole to put in. I might get another Superfeet Carbon, maybe, because it's a thin one, but it's expensive. So I'm not really going to rush into it right now. But there's more to the story, because I had to take the Sole insoles out of the ASICS Gel Cumulus 22 running shoes that I have to put them in the Danners. So I had to find a combination that worked in those. But I did. I found one. It wasn't easy. I tried a lot of combinations. But what I did find, I don't even know if I can remember it. Oh, yeah, I put in the hike. I do remember it was the ASICS Original Factory on the bottom, and then I put the Run Max on top, the Superfeet Run Max. I'll just check that. Yeah, the factory underneath the Superfeet Run Max, the Adapt Run Max they're called, actually. But and they're really good in the ASICS. Having two different insoles in the ASICS is really good, because they were a big fit size wise on my feet. I mean, they're perfect. They're really, there's no heel slip, but which that was never, I don't believe I achieved that before. It was close to being perfect with the Sole insoles, because they're super thick, but so I could either order another pair of the super thick insoles, but I don't need to now, because I have an extra snug fit in the ASICS by adding the Adapt Run Max. So the ASICS are good. The Danners are good right now. I don't need to get more insoles, but if I do get more, I'm recognizing now that I will need some more thinner insoles, so either the black or the carbon, which are yellow. But both of them are Superfeet. They're the ones that are the thinnest, but they still have enough rigidity that they're not going to just fold up, or get wrinkly inside the boot or anything like that. And that's it, I think, for those insoles right now. I took 2 grams of vitamin C last night, which was the Jameson slow-release vitamin C, which I also had some of. I couldn't find it, really. It was floating around on my table somewhere in a bottle, And so, I mean, I found the original bottle and everything, but haven't seen it for a long time until yesterday. So I thought that I had a little bit of a sore throat, so I'd take those before I went to bed. And today I tried the matcha tea again. The old one that has been in the fridge for a long time, I tried, just to see whether that'll give me a sore throat or not. And I don't think it will, but if it does, then I'll know that that's the culprit, because that's the only thing I've eaten today. So, but I think the stew was the culprit. It was but that's just, you know, it's just a guess, really. So that has been solved, maybe, but we'll see. Now, the insoles is an amazing, very important how the insoles are, how the shoes fit, how the feet are in the shoes, in the boots. Right now, I'm not really happy wearing the Danners, just because my feet don't like to have that much room. You know, they don't. I wore the Danners out to, I was out shoveling snow, and I wore the Danners out there. And then I brushed them off when I came in to keep them dry. But, I mean, they're basically, you know, I can almost use them as a winter boot, but I don't have too much of a thick sock. And there's, I think they're, my feet will get cold very quickly in these boots, in the Danners, because they're not winter boots at all. I've got the Arctic Baffin boots or whatever, you know, they're Baffin boots. They're meant for very cold temperatures. Literally Arctic temperatures. That's what they're meant for. And they're really, really beautifully insulated boots. They're fantastic quality. And I got those for like about $70, I think, on sale many years ago. But I only wear them for shoveling snow, and so they never wear out, really, at least not quickly. I'll probably have them for the rest of my life. They're that durable. But they have the Superfeet Carbons in them now. I'm going to try the Superfeet Carbons in the Danners. I think if I put anything more in the Danners, they're going to be too tight. That's what I think. But no, you know where I know where the Superfeet Carbons are. They're not. It's the Superfeet Black. Yeah, the snow boots, the Baffin boots have the Superfeet Black. My old Merrells have the Superfeet Carbon. That's what has the Superfeet Carbon. Maybe I can find another. Can I find another insole that'll fit in the Merrells? Because I cut. Oh yeah, because I haven't tried. You know what? I haven't tried in the Merrells, the old Merrells. I haven't tried the Adapt Hike Max, which were cut shorter. Because I couldn't use them before because they were too long. That's what I need to try.
Yeah, right. Okay, so. Yeah, I need to get those. Yeah, okay. I mean, I've also got the Superfeet Greener available and the Spenco. Polysorb, or they're not Polysorb, the Maximum Support Spenco are available also. They're not being used right now. I keep trying the Spenco Maximum Support, and they're not bad. They're just not the best in most cases, but sooner or later I'll find a shoe in which they'll be the best, I think. It's almost certain to be true. Maybe they'll even work in my mules, actually, in my Nayot mules. Which are like a clog. It's kind of like a leather clog. And they've got some other, they've got a partial insole, like a 3/4 length insole in them right now that was one of the ones I got originally, but that arrived late. So right now, I know these work well, the Superfeet Carbons, but the old Merrells have, that's what they have, Superfeet, is it Carbon? Yeah, I think so. I think that's the Superfeet Carbon. It's yellowish, sort of lime green color. I want to try the left one because that's the one that'll be tighter. So I'll put the Adapt Run Max, which is a light blue color. The polka dots are light blue, as opposed to a green for the Adapt Run Max. These are the Hike Max. If I said Run Max, I meant Hike Max. These are Adapt Hike Max. They've been cut off, shorter, more for a size 8, which is what these are. And they're not going to slip in here, I don't think, are they? Let's see. Oh, no, they have no slip. There's no front-to-back slip. And they fit, that's because they fit well width-wise.
and there's a tiny bit of length at the end, but it's not going to slip front to back because they fit so tight on the side, at the tip, on the sides near the tip, they fit very tight. I mean, I just, this is not a fun, it's not, there's not fun here. This, it's not fun, it's exciting, but it's not fun, it's hard work. It, like all the, you know, I'm starting to wonder if you can wear shoes out by trying them on, because I'm trying them on so many times. I think you probably can wear them out by trying them on. That's what I'm figuring out here. Like, it's just amazing. It's, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's incredible, but it's kind of ridiculous how many times I have to try them on. But that's what it used to be like whenever I would buy shoes. You know, when I was very young, I would go with my mother, and there'd be a long process trying almost every shoe in the store, because I was from a small town and they didn't have many options, but for my feet. But I mean, they would try nearly every shoe in the store, and finally we'd find something that would work. But I know a little bit from all of those experiences and escapades or whatever they were, you know. But I mean, I got the same thing when I was older. I did the same thing. I went to the stores and I tried everything on and walked around and felt my heel slipping in my right foot and kept trying on more different things. Now, these actually fit perfectly, I think. That's incredible if they do, because there's just about the right amount of toe room, which I couldn't get. Plus, in any other insole in these old Merrells, I'm going to be really happy if this works, because that means I'll have the Superfeet Carbon as an option in the Danners. And if I have that, I can probably put the Superfeet Carbon in the Danners with the other. Which one is this? I'm starting to doubt which one it is now. This is, no, you know what this might be? Wait a minute. I'm not sure. I gotta go. I think I forgot. I'm not wearing that Run Max right now. I gotta get it. That's right. The Run Max are in the A6. That's right. And they're a running shoe, so they should be Run Max. But they're in there and they fit perfect and they're the best. So I can't use the Run Max. No, but I wasn't going to, was I? No, yes I was. Because I'm using these others. I got the insole. Okay, the old Merrell is empty, ready for the new insole. And none of my boots have any smell, any odor anymore, because I've got my own foot powder has solved that problem, or the foot powder I had prior to that for these old ones solved the problem. But look at this. Oh, yeah. And the new insoles smell great. And I'll put foot powder in very often if I need it, but I'll put it in as often as I need, and there's never going to be any foot odor in my boots ever again. That's what I believe firmly now, so... And by the way, Jerusalem was destroyed in 587 BCE because all of the astronomical evidence, planetary and solar, lunar, all of that stuff aligns with that date. And there's no 20-year cycle that can push that data on or back or any direction 20 years. Either way, it can't be changed by 20 years and have it line up. So without doctoring the data and changing it, you can't get a different date than 587. 587 is the correct date for the destruction of Jerusalem. All right, so I'm going to just try these. And I thought about this idea about, you know, the Greek word for draw. In John chapter 21, where they were unable to draw in the net because of the multitude of fishes, that's not the word draw in English. It's the word draw in. It's the verb draw in. They were unable to draw it in. The verb is not the verb draw in English. It's the verb draw in, which is a different verb in English from the English verb to draw. To draw in and to draw are different verbs in English, just to clarify that. So it's not a direct correlation there. The Greek word draw is used, and therefore the literal translation is, you know, they were unable to draw the net in, right? But in English, to haul it in is changing the word, right, to the English phrase. But the difference is in John, in the book of John, where it says Jesus said, no one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him. It's not saying unless the Father who sent me draws him in. If you see what I mean, it's a different application. Draws him and draws him in. So there's no need to change the word draw to haul in order to get the sense draw in, because it's already there. Draw in is different from draw. There's already a distinction there. Just draw in is the more literal and correct translation, which is better to preserve in most cases. In all cases, really, it's better to have a literal translation, because then later you can get new meaning from this word of God, which is alive, which you can't get if you've already changed the translation to a non-literal translation, no matter what the language is. In English, in this case, the non-literal translation is less preferable, because it's losing some of the original sense that was there in the word draw, right? If you change it to haul, you're saying we're going to put more meaning into how hard they're pulling, where the Greek didn't have that. It wasn't in the Greek. So even though it could mean they were unable to haul it in, it doesn't have to mean that. It's adding a shade of meaning that may not be, well, it's just not necessary, but it may not be the meaning that was intended by the writer. That's the thing. Because it wasn't there in the original language. It's not there. I mean, it could be correct, right? But it's not in the original. Therefore, it's better to preserve the literal version so we still understand what it means. Draw it in. We know they were hauling on it because they were unable to draw it in. We can imagine that. But if we want to imagine they weren't pulling hard, we can imagine that too. It doesn't specify. That's the thing there. But there's a difference between draw, unless God draws him, and saying, between that and saying, unless God draws him in. It didn't say that, right? It said, so the word, you could also do it this way. You could say that we're unable to draw the net of fishes in, but no one can come to me, Jesus said, unless the Father who sent me attracts him. You could change it. You could change the word draw to attract instead of the word draw, because the word draw is not the right word there either, really. It doesn't really get the real sense of what it means to attract somebody. Or, you know, it's almost the word seduce, or, you know, it's more like, you know, it sparks his interest or calls him, you know, in the sense of calling. Unless God calls him. That would be a good translation too, I think, because a calling means not literally calling, obviously, because Jehovah very seldom ever spoke directly to individuals with a literal voice. But I mean, the idea of calling is a good one there, maybe. So I mean, it wouldn't have to be the word draw there either, but the original word, it works though. The word draw is fine in both cases, really. I think that's a very it's one that requires a lot of thought. That's what I think. But the idea of hauling it in, yeah, that might be what the original writer was intending to say, but he could have used a different Greek word to get that meaning across, I'm sure, if he wanted to. Or he could have qualified it more if he wanted to get the idea of hauling. But he didn't do that. He didn't say they were hauling hard and they couldn't get it in. Yeah, what, that was not in the original Greek. So you see, there's, yeah, it's we have to be very careful about changing things, but especially when we have a good literal translation like the reference version. I don't like the idea of making English idioms out of the original Greek, as far as having a reference, is better. But you can do both. You can have both versions, I guess, right? Obviously. But I mean, the very essence of your word is truth, or the substance of your word is truth. The substance is a word used figuratively in the case of Psalm 119:160 in the reference version, but it's a perfectly good translation. The substance of your word is truth. We understand that substance is a literal thing, as well as being, a figurative thing, as well as being a literal meaning. It's not a physical thing, substance, necessarily. It's just a figurative idea about the essence. The very essence is also a good substitute, perhaps, but who knows? Essence also means smell. So what are you going to say? I mean, do you want the idea of smell? It smells like the truth? Is that the idea that it was trying to be conveyed? See, I think you want to stick with the literal version, or with the reference version in that case too, because it conveys the idea that was perhaps intended, but obviously written by the original writer. Is the main point. It's preserving the original writing so that we can get more meaning from it later, as the word of God changes, and because it's alive, it changes, and we need to be able to know what the original was. That's the issue with that. So I'm not in agreement with that either, with that particular case about hauls it in. I'm unfortunately can't agree with that either. But anyway, there might be some cases where any version could be better than the reference version. In some cases, it's possible. It's possible. I think the reference version is so good, though. It's very hard to improve on. Especially if you want a literal version, that's the thing. If you want an idiomatic English version, then it's not the version that you want, obviously. I think it's pretty obvious, because it does have a few, but it's more closely related to the Hebrew, which is more, and the Greek, which is more, especially the Hebrew, it's more poetic and preserves that poetry that you see in the Hebrew that's so wonderfully, precious, valuable, like invaluable. It's so precious. But anyway, so those are my thoughts on that. I can't do astronomical calculations all day long every day, but I will have to revisit it as far as the destruction of Jerusalem goes. I'll have to revisit it from time to time, but there's just so much evidence that these scientists, who are not trying to favor any one religious group, they're just being scientists, and they're just doing what now, they are not necessarily Bible experts either, but I don't think that it's true to the Bible to say that Jerusalem was destroyed in 607. It's not true at all, because we know that it was the 19th year or 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar when Jerusalem was destroyed, and that is not going to line up with 607, no matter what you do, as far as all the evidence goes. It's just not going to line up. And you don't need it to, because it's not harming anything, any meaning in the Bible. There's nothing harmed by saying that Jerusalem was destroyed in 587 BCE. Nothing in the Bible is made less true by that. There's just no issue with it. It doesn't undermine the date 1914 or anything. It doesn't do anything. There's no problem. Jerusalem lost their authority to rule in 608 BCE, and that's the real year. We can't. There's nothing that favors 607 for that either. It's favored. 608 is favored, and whether that lines up precisely with a certain specific exact number of years between such and such and a date in 1914 is not really that important, because we don't know what happened as far as why there was, what events occurred after the devil was thrown out of heaven, how long it took him to start World War I. We don't know that. Come on. And we don't know how long the war went on in heaven before the devil was thrown out. We don't need to know until Jehovah reveals it. But we can't force the date to be what we think it is based on what someone said in the past I mean, and we're not being honest if we do that. I mean, that doesn't make it true. We can't do that and have it be true. We can't have it be true just because somebody else said it. You can't just say something and make it true by saying it. It either is supported by the evidence or it's not. And in this case, 607 is not supported by the evidence. It's not sad either. That's not a sad thing. That's just the way it is. It's the objective reality that we're interested in science. And you have to have science to give you the evidence when you're looking at objective reality, you know, which is what you do when you're looking at whether a prophecy was fulfilled. You have to find the objective reality that either verifies the prophecy or not. You can't create objective reality out of a prophecy. That's not the same. You're not going to demonstrate any. You're not going to be able to prove it anyway. But I mean, you can prove. I guess you can't prove prophecy anyway, right? You can still believe whatever you want. You can believe that it's possible that Jerusalem was destroyed in 607 if you want to, but it's really not possible unless there was some grand conspiracy 600 years before Christ. That's the only way that it can happen. You know, a conspiracy to change chronology would have been necessary, and it just isn't. It's not what the Bible is saying. The Bible doesn't say that there had to be 70 years. That's not what it says. That's not what it's saying. Just because it looks like there's 70. Let's look at that scripture. Let's look at that scripture. It's at the end of 2 Chronicles, I believe. Yeah, in 36. Right. All the days of lying desolated, it kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. It doesn't say that it does not say at all that it lay desolate for 70 years. That's not what it's saying at all. It's saying that 70 years had to be fulfilled. And it's saying that Jerusalem kept Sabbath until those 70 years were fulfilled. It doesn't say that the years of keeping Sabbath began at the beginning of the 70 years. It doesn't say that. Until the land had paid off its Sabbaths, right there. We know there was an exile in the third year of Jehoiakim when Nebuchadnezzar came up to Jerusalem. In the book of Daniel, chapter 1, it mentions that Nebuchadnezzar, what did I say? Did I say Nebuchadnezzar? I don't think I did, but he came up, but that's what it says in Daniel, that he came to Jerusalem in the third year of, I think it was Zedekiah, wasn't it? Yeah, in the third year of Zedekiah, it was Jehoiakim, the third year of Jehoiakim, that's right. I don't even have to look it up because I remember it, but Jehoiakim. Which is therefore sometime around 606 or maybe even 605. But it could have been 607 that occurred. But that was not the destruction of Jerusalem. So, but that would certainly be a time when the land would be starting to lie fallow, because there would be people taken in exile at that time. So the land would begin to pay off its Sabbaths at that point. And then the 70 years can begin around 608 and would end around 538 or 37. And that was when Israel returned to Jerusalem again and began to inhabit the land and farm again after the land paid off its Sabbaths. So it was to lie desolate and keep Sabbath for 70 years. There's no reason. I mean, it doesn't have to be keeping Sabbath for 70 years, though. That's not necessary in the sense of this verse. There are many things in the scriptures that don't follow the pattern of being literal, exact, you know, corresponding exact beginning and end. It doesn't have to. The time period can be overlapping with another time period, and that's not at all unusual. In the Bible, the idea of prophecy being fulfilled is it can be fulfilled in different ways, and partial fulfillments can occur, and all kinds of different ways of being fulfilled occur in Scripture. All the days of lying desolate, it kept Sabbath, right, to fulfill 70 years. But the 70 years that were fulfilled was a different 70 years. It wasn't the 70 years of keeping Sabbath that was being fulfilled. It was the 70 years of the rule, 70 years of the domination of Babylon. That's what was being fulfilled. Babylon was meant to dominate for 70 years. That was what was being fulfilled. And that began in 608 and ended in, we don't know exactly when it began, because that's not something we're privy to, but it was very likely began very near to 608, because it ended in 538 with the first year of Cyrus reigning Babylon. So, you know, after Babylon was conquered by the Medes and Persians. So in 538 it ended. We know that. So you can calculate back 70 years, and therefore 608 is the beginning of that period. But the 70-year period is not a critical period. That's the thing to realize. It's mentioned a number of times in different ways. There are many proofs against the idea that, because in Zechariah it was talked about that there were 70 years. If we look that up, 70 years. Zechariah, there's a prophecy there in the early part, 1 and 12, of whom you have denounced these 70 years, in Zechariah 1 and 12. And that was the time where they were already, if you look at the beginning, the second year of Darius. That's 520? Yeah, I mean, and there the 70 years is mentioned in that context. The second year of Darius is sometime around 521 or 520 BCE. Because that's when they're doing their final construction of the temple, which was completed. I believe it was year 6 of Darius, actually. But anyway, this is the second year of Darius, where they're still working on it. But, I mean, it's in the Bible. What year it was, whether it was the 5th or 6th year of Darius, that's in the Bible, too. We can find it later. But it's definitely one of those two. And that was about 517, which is 70 years after the destruction. So, but here he's saying they've already been denounced 70 years, and they haven't even completed the temple yet, which is 517, which is the 70 years after the destruction of 587. There's a lot of reasons to think that those 70 years that are mentioned in 2 Chronicles is not anything crucial at all. It's because if it were, there'd be a lot more information given about when those 70 years started. It's not given. There's no information given about when those 70 years started. It's just mentioning the idea of fulfilling Sabbaths. And we've got to work on that idea more. We have to look at it and work on it more. But it's not referring to... well, let's look back again. Let's go back to where we were. Yeah, we were in 2 Chronicles 36. Yeah, to fulfill 70 years... But what's it talking about? He burnt the house of God, verse 19. That's what happened. And he carried off the captives, right, in verse 20. This is what the king of the Chaldeans did, who was Nebuchadnezzar, who conquered them in 587. Right? And then they became, you know, captive in Babylon in verse 20, right? Until the king of Persia, or the royalty of Persia, it says, began to reign. That was 538 when, well, 539 they conquered, and 538 officially they would begin to reign, according to them, but according to us, maybe from 539. Or according to a foreigner, it would be 539, but according to the official years of those kings, maybe it would be 1 year after he began to rule, or in the next year sometime he took official control. So just because of the calendar turning around every year at a certain date. So 538 might be year one. So if we add 70 years to that, then the 70 years began in 608, which is correct, because that was when Jerusalem lost control of their kingship, because Josiah was killed by Necho, the king of Egypt, and the Egyptians put in control Jehoiakim in 609 or 608, but his year one is 608, his official year one, 608. And then in his year three, Nebuchadnezzar came up and took captives as well. But his year three could be taken as 607 or 606 or 605, depending on what his year one is taken as. But by the writer Daniel in chapter one of Daniel. So we still have a lot of sort of reasoning and considering to do there. It's not as simple as just, you know, if we want to know the truth, it's not, you can't just make an assertion and be correct about it. It's not that simple. I mean, unless you've done an awful lot of research, it's not going to be truthful according to the best available evidence, because it's not 607 when Jerusalem was destroyed. It's 587. That was when it was burned. 587. Right? So, and they came to be servants for about 48 years until the king of Persia began to reign. And that fulfilled the 70 years. And the 70 years was the time it laid desolate, because it was desolate right from the time when they no longer had a king that was their own king. They had a vassal king. They didn't have their own king. They had a king appointed by the Egyptian king in 608. That was the year one of that happening. So it's not correct if we, you know, to say that it was physically desolate with the temple being destroyed for 70 years, because the temple was destroyed for 50 years, as Josephus also writes, that it was 50 years that the temple was destroyed. So, yeah, Jerusalem was, you know, in some sense desolated for 70 years from 608, but it wasn't, the whole city wasn't destroyed until 587. And the fulfilling of 70 years had to do with the years that in Jeremiah, that, I'm trying to recall what chapter is it in Jeremiah. Okay, we'll look up 70 years again. Yeah, that's what I should do. Because it talks about 70 years in Jeremiah a couple of times, I think. Is it Jeremiah 25? Yeah, they'll have to serve the king of Babylon 70 years. It doesn't say that the land would be devastated 70 years. You see, it doesn't say that at all. It says that they have to serve the king of Babylon 70 years. Let's look at the cross-reference. Maybe it'll give us the other reference in Jeremiah, or maybe not. No, it doesn't. It does give the Second Chronicles reference there. 27, I remember it's Jeremiah 27. It's just whether I'm going to find it here. But I don't have to find it. I can, or 29? Oh, there it is, yeah. Okay, Jeremiah 29, it says, in accord with the fulfilling of 70 years at Babylon. That's the one. The fulfilling of the 70 years would occur at Babylon. In other words, the 70 years ended at Babylon. That didn't mean that they were in Babylon for 70 years. That's not what it meant. It didn't say that. The fulfillment would occur at Babylon. And it would be a 70 years that was fulfilled, but it doesn't say they were there for 70 years. That's not what's intended. It's just like Jesus saying, you know, I tell you today you will be with me in paradise. He's not saying, truly I tell you today you will be with me in paradise. You know, there's different ways of interpreting the same sentence. It's the same idea that you can't force it to mean what you want it to mean, or what you have to be honest and admit that you interpreted that the wrong way. Once you know the facts, you can't force the facts to fit your interpretation and be honest. That's not honesty. Let's look at, I think it's Jeremiah 27. It's not honest. I mean, it's not an honest approach, because the facts are very different. And if you choose to ignore the facts, you're not a wise person. And I've been through the facts many times, but we'll have to go through them again at some point. We'll go through all the facts of the astronomy and all that, but there's a lot of facts there to be considered. In the beginning of the kingdom of Jehoiakim, verse 1, right? And then here it says, I myself have given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. So they served Babylon in the beginning of the kingdom of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, which was, he began to rule in 608. In that beginning of, that's the beginning of his kingdom. And here you have the actual statement that explains when the 70 years began. But this is only one way of interpreting it, but it makes far more sense than the other explanation of trying to change the destruction to make it different from 587, which it was. 587 is the correct date for the destruction, according to the evidence. And if we look at this, verse 6, I myself have given all these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And verse 1 said, in the beginning of the kingdom of Jehoiakim. So the fulfillment of 70 years, right? If we look at 29 again, the fulfilling of 70 years at Babylon. There would be 70 years when Babylon would be dominating. All these lands into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And it was the nations all the nations that would serve him for 70 years. The fulfillment of 70 years was not to do with the destruction of Jerusalem. It was to do with how long the nations would serve the king of Babylon. That's what it had to do with. Look at this. Let's look at this reference here. All these nations, Jeremiah 28 and 14, they must serve him. A yoke of iron I will put upon the neck of all these nations to serve Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. It wasn't to do with Jerusalem being destroyed for 70 years. It was to do with 70 years serving the king of Babylon, and it started in 608. That's what it's talking about. That's far more correct than the other way of considering it, especially considering there's another 70 years talked about in Zechariah as well. And that was the year 520, when he was talking about 20 years already of desolation, which is less than 70 years after 587, but it's certainly a lot more than 70 years after 608 to be in 520, you know, BCE. So there's a lot of dishonesty going on there, trying to make 607 a special year, which it is not. nor does it incorporate. You don't know the scriptures. You're showing your ignorance of the scriptures when you maintain a chronological date without any scriptural reference. You're showing your ignorance. So that's just not acceptable, unfortunately. Just not acceptable. Psalms 50. A melody of Asaph. A melody of Asaph. Psalm 50, little children, the divine one. Let's pray to Jehovah. Jehovah, you are the divine one. We pray to you to ask for your assistance, to help us remain humble. And in this is in order that you may exalt us in your own due time. In Jesus' name, amen. The divine one, God Jehovah, has himself spoken, and he proceeds to call the earth from the rising of the sun until its setting. Out of Zion, the perfection of prettiness, God himself has beamed forth. Our God will come and cannot possibly keep silent. Before him there devours a fire, and all around him it has become exceedingly stormy weather. He calls to the heavens above and to the earth so as to execute judgment on his people. Gather to me my loyal ones, those concluding my covenant over sacrifice. And the heavens tell of his righteousness, for God himself is judge. Selah. Do listen, O my people, and I will speak. O Israel, and I will bear witness against you. I am God, your God. Not concerning your sacrifices do I reprove you, nor concerning your whole burnt offerings that are in front of me constantly. I will not take out of your house a bull, out of your pens he-goats. For to me belongs every wild animal of the forest, the beasts upon a thousand mountains. I well know every winged creature of the mountains, and the animal throngs of the open field are with me. If I were hungry, I would not say it to you. For to me the productive land and its fullness belong. Shall I eat the flesh of powerful bulls and the blood of he-goats? Shall I drink? Offer thanksgiving as your sacrifice to God, and pay to the Most High your vows, and call me in the day of distress. I shall rescue you, and you will glorify me. But to the wicked one God will have to say, what right do you have to enumerate my regulations, and that you may bear my covenant in your mouth? Why, you have hated discipline, and you keep throwing my words behind you. Whenever you saw a thief, you were even pleased with him, and your sharing was with adulterers. Your mouth you have to let loose to what is bad, and your tongue you keep attached to deception. You sit and speak against your own brother, against the son of your mother you give away a fault. These things you have done, and I kept silent. You imagine that I would positively become like you. I am going to reprove you, and I will set things in order before your eyes. Understand this, please, you forgetters of God, that I may not tear you to pieces without there being any deliverer. The one offering thanksgiving as his sacrifice is the one that glorifies me. And as for the one keeping a set way, I will cause him to see salvation by God. That's the end of Psalm 50. And that one seemed to be very self-explanatory to me. Like it was very fitting, timely, right on time. You know. So a set way, though, would be, you know, the way is set by astronomical observations. That's how they set chronology. The way of chronology is set by astronomical observations. And those are the ones that establish 587 definitively as the year when Jerusalem was destroyed. Now we're at Isaiah chapter 30. Okay, is this long or short? It's very long. Oh, it's very long for Isaiah. This is very long. So we do need the extra time. It's going to take us to do this. Okay, good. So we're right on schedule, I believe. Woe to the stubborn sons is the utterance of Jehovah. Those disposed to carry out counsel, but not that from me. And to pour out a libation, but not with my spirit. in order to add sin to sin. Those who are setting out to go down to Egypt and who have not inquired of my own mouth. To take shelter in the stronghold of Pharaoh and to take refuge in the shadow of Egypt. And the stronghold of Pharaoh must become even for you men a reason for shame. And the refuge in the shadow of Egypt a cause for humiliation. For his princes have come to be in Zoan itself, and his own envoys reach even Hanes. Everyone will certainly become ashamed of a people that bring no benefit to one, that are of no help and bring no benefit, but are a reason for shame and also a cause for reproach. The pronouncement against the beasts of the south, through the land of distress and hard conditions, of the lion and the leopard growling, of the viper and the flying fiery snake, on the shoulders of full-grown asses they carry their resources, and on the humps of camels their supplies. In behalf of the people they will prove of no benefit. And the Egyptians are mere vanity, and they will help simply for nothing. Therefore, I have called this one Rahab. They are for sitting still. Now come, write it upon a tablet with them, and inscribe it even in a book, that it may serve for a future day, for a witness to time indefinite. For it is a rebellious people. Untruthful sons, sons who have been unwilling to hear the law of Jehovah, who have said to the ones seeing, you must not see, and to the ones having visions, you must not envision for us any straightforward things. Speak to us smooth things. Envision deceptive things. Turn aside from the way, deviate from the path. Cause the Holy One of Israel to cease, just on account of us. Therefore, this is what the Holy One of Israel has said. In view of your rejecting of this word, and since you men trust in defrauding and in what is devious, and you support yourselves on it, therefore, for you, this error will become like a broken section about to fall down, a swelling out in a highly raised wall, the breakdown of which may come suddenly in an instant. And one will certainly break it, as in the breaking of a large jar of the potter's, crushed to pieces without one sparing it, so that there cannot be found among its crushed pieces a fragment of earthenware with which to rake the fire from the fireplace or to skim water from a marshy place. For this is what the Sovereign Lord Jehovah, the Holy One of Israel, has said. By coming back and resting, you people will be saved. Your mightiness will prove to be simply in keeping undisturbed and in trustfulness. But you were not willing, and you proceeded to say, no, but on horses we shall flee. That is why you will flee, and on swift horses we shall ride. That is why those pursuing you will show themselves swift. 1,000 will tremble on account of the rebuke of one. On account of the rebuke of 5, you will flee until you will have remained over like a mast on the top of a mountain and like a signal on a hill. And therefore, Jehovah will keep in expectation of showing you favor, and therefore he will rise up to show you mercy. For Jehovah is a God of judgment. Happy are all those keeping in expectation of him. When the very people in Zion will dwell in Jerusalem, you will by no means weep. He will without fail show you favor at the sound of your outcry. As soon as he hears it, he will actually answer you. And Jehovah will certainly give you people bread in the form of distress and water in the form of oppression. Yet your grand instructor will no longer hide himself, and your eyes must become eyes seeing your grand instructor. And your own ears will hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it, you people, in case you people should go to the right or in case you should go to the left. And you people must defile the overlaying of your graven images of silver and the close-fitting cover of your molten statue of gold. You will scatter them. Like a menstruating woman, you will say to it, mere dirt. And he will certainly give the rain for your seed with which you sow the ground, and as the produce of the ground, bread, which must become fat and oily. Your livestock will graze in that day in a spacious pasture, and the cattle and the full-grown asses cultivating the ground will eat fodder seasoned with sorrel, which was winnowed with the shovel and with the fork. And upon every high mountain and upon every elevated hill there must come to be streams, water ditches. In the day of the big slaughter, when the towers fall, and the light of the full moon must become as the light of the glowing sun, and the very light of the glowing sun will become 7 times as much. like the light of 7 days, in the day that Jehovah binds up the breakdown of his people and heals even the severe wound resulting from the stroke by him. Look, the name of Jehovah is coming from far away, burning with his anger and with heavy clouds. As for his lips, they have become full of denunciation, and his tongue is like a devouring fire, and his spirit is like a flooding torrent that reaches clear to the neck, to swing the nations to and fro with a sieve of worthlessness, and the bridle that causes one to wander about will be in the jaws of the peoples. You people will come to have a song like that in the night that one sanctifies oneself for a festival, and rejoicing of heart like that of one walking with a flute to enter into the mountain of Jehovah, to the rock of Israel. And Jehovah will certainly make the dignity of his voice to be heard, and will make the descending of his arm to be seen. In the raging of anger, and the flame of a devouring fire, and cloudburst, and rainstorm, and hailstones. For, because of the voice of Jehovah, Assyria will be struck with terror. He will strike it even with a staff, and every swing of his rod of chastisement that Jehovah will cause to settle down upon Assyria will certainly prove to be with tambourines and with harps. And with battles of brandishing, he will actually fight against them, for his Topheth is set in order from recent times. It is also prepared for the king himself. He has made its pile deep. Fire and wood are in abundance. The breath of Jehovah, like a torrent of sulfur, is burning against it. And that is the end of Isaiah chapter 30. And I have no sore throat. And so I think that there's nothing wrong with the matcha tea, which was in my fridge for months and months and months after being opened. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. No symptom did I find so far, anyway. I'll be eating again later, so it'll be too late to find out whether it's that alone causing it. But if there is a sore throat that I get later, I'll try again with this matcha tea by itself, and I will not eat anything else at that time to investigate it further. But right now, I don't believe there's any need to do that, because my sore throat that I had, it was persistent for a reason. What's that? Wait a minute. That's the Super Pete Green. Oh, yeah. Okay, good. The sore throat that I had was persistent because I had food poisoning, and it was a lingering sore throat because I had a very serious infection. I didn't have a... Even after the sore throat went away and I could swallow without pain, I'd swallow and there's no sore throat. But when I yawned or opened my mouth wide by yawning, I felt the pain, the sore throat was felt again. I could feel it when I was yawning, but not when I was swallowing. It's still not completely healed, but I never had any, you know, malaise other than the sore throat. There was no nausea, no head cold or anything. There was nothing. There was no other symptom. We're still in allergy season right now because we haven't had a severe frost yet, maybe. I think so. There's still allergies going on, I had no flu symptoms that you would have, like no fever, but no feelings of malaise, nothing, just a sore throat. But if I had not taken the vitamin C, I have no doubt, seeing as I took so much vitamin C and I had such a high bowel tolerance, I have no doubt that I had a very bad infection of food poisoning. That's what I believe. So, and if I had not taken the vitamin C, I believe I would have had a lot worse symptoms for a lot longer. That's what I believe also. I don't believe that I can take 30 grams or 36 grams or 24 grams in one day like I did. And the first day, by the way, or the first day of the ascorbate, I took some grams that I forgot to mention in the morning, or in the earlier part of the day. That's what happened, that I took 12. Yeah. So it looked like I only took 24, but no, it was like 18. Yeah. I took 36 grams on the 16th of November, but the ones I mentioned starting at 2200 hours was only 18 grams. However, there was 18 grams at 05:23 in the morning, and also at 13:33 in the afternoon. There was 12 grams, 6 grams at 05:23 and 12 grams at 13:33 earlier that same day. And that makes a total of another 18, for a total of a 36 for that day. And that's what I had said, but I had forgotten to mention the 18 in the morning. And early afternoon that made up the rest of that, the balance of that 36 grams on the second day. But I did take 36 grams on the second day, and that's a lot. I would have had bowel tolerance if I wasn't severely ill, but I never felt the illness because vitamin C will combat and counteract the illness. That's the whole thing. That's the point of it. That's why you take it. You take it before you get sick. When you know it's coming on, you need to take the vitamin C then, before it's too late. So, we're at 1 hour now. We could stop right there, but I don't know what else. Oh, yeah, no, I want to watch Derek Parravicini. That's right. I mean, I want to talk more about insoles, but I think it'll be continuing. This insole saga keeps going. I think I've got my boots on now. My feet are not as warm right now. I think they never warmed up after I went outside because I just haven't warmed up inside the house yet. There was cold air inside the boots from being outside and they never warmed up. I feel like my feet are cold. Oh, I'm wearing my old boots. Oh, that's the problem. Oh, yeah, right. These old Merrells feel like the Danners almost. They're not that bad. They're not that uncomfortable at all. So, and now they have, did I say the Run? No. These are the Hike Max because the Run Max never fit in these, I think. Yeah, the Run Max are in the, my Run Max are in my A6 on top of the A6 factory insoles and the Adapt, that's the Adapt Run Max and the Adapt Hike Max are now in the old Merrells on top of the, no, they're not on top of anything. They're just in the bottom of the boot. Because there's no room in the boot to put the original factory insole in those. The A6 had enough room in them to put the original factory insole, partly because they're size 9s, but they're just a roomier shoe. Now I'm going to put the Danners back on and tell you what they feel like. They'll be warm because they're sitting here in the warm air near the heater, fairly near the heater. They won't be too cold, so hopefully they'll keep my feet warmer than those old Merrells were. Right now they felt my feet were cold in them. Even though I'm indoors and I didn't wear them outside. The ones I wore outside were my new Danners, which I should not have worn outside, but I was outside before I realized it, and so I just kept them on. But I wouldn't choose to wear these out in the snow, but now that I've done it, I'll be more likely to remember to take them off and to waterproof them too. I'm going to try to waterproof these now, maybe with mink oil, but I'm not sure. I have to research that. Let me write that down. Yeah, I want to write down the waterproofing for the boots. Boots waterproof. Proofing, okay. I want to look into getting... Oh, yeah. I have something I want to talk about later that I want to look into getting. Yeah, there's some things I want to look into getting that I've got a list for. Let's listen to Derek Parravicini here. This is a very fascinating thing about this. Why is that doing that? It's highlighted. I hope it doesn't do that.
Derek possesses an extremely rare gift of universal absolute pitch, which means he is able to discriminate every note he hears, much as we recognize different colors.
When areas of the brain are not being stimulated in the usual way, those areas of the brain are recruited for other functions. In Derek's case, auditory processing, tactile processing, compensating for the reduction in visual processing.
If you have more neurons, then it ought to be possible to store more auditory information. The brain doesn't waste neurons, they're too precious.
But not only can Derek clearly perceive every different note, but he can do this even when they are played simultaneously.
E flat is something special to Derek, isn't it, Derek?
Yeah.
So for most people, all the notes sound similar. They sound a bit high or a bit low. But for you, Derek, every note on the piano is quite different.
It is.
Okay, here's one note for you. Good.
That's one note.
Excellent. Now listen to that for two. Ready?
Two.
Yeah, when it gets to about three, I'm starting to lose track. Good.
That's five notes.
Excellent. And here's six notes. Ready?
Okay.
Just the six.
That's six
notes. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Good.
Most highly trained musicians wouldn't be able to do that. They could tell you what the bottom note and the top note was, and they might be able to work out what the middle ones should be. Derek seems to know.
That's ten.
Fantastic. Well done, Derek. The thing with the chords on the piano is obviously I've only got 10 fingers and Derek's only got 10 fingers. So at the minute, that's really as far as we can go in finding out just how many notes Derek can hear.
But there may be one way to find out more. What if Derek were to hear dozens of notes all played at once? He is about to listen to a sequence of chords that he has never heard before, and this time played by a full orchestra. Fifty instruments are playing dozens of notes all at the same time. Almost incredibly, Derek is able to distill the essence of all he hears into what he plays.
Extraordinary, really. I mean, these incredible flourishes all the time. I couldn't work it out until it suddenly struck me that, of course, the chords consisted of more than 10 notes, i.e. more than 10 fingers. And therefore, he had to, in order to accommodate all the notes that he heard, he had to arpeggiate them going up and down, like a harp, rather than playing block chords, which is what we were doing. Really fascinating. You know, that he can't see this sort of large display of instruments and sounds and what the instruments look like. It's amazing. Yet he responds to all the different colours that are that an orchestra possesses, the sheen of the strings and the sort of roundness of the brass tone. It's obviously a huge talent there, which none of us can understand, and it was a most rewarding experience.
Derek's brain must be wired very differently from the rest of us. But can we begin to understand how? At the psychology department of Goldsmiths College in London, Professor Linda Pring has designed an experiment that will give us a window onto Derek's working brain.
This EEG technique of monitoring brain waves is something that's been around for a long time, but only recently have we had the technological advance to really refine it.
Right, I'm just going to measure your head.
Linda believes that Derek's singular musical capacities are the neurological consequences of his specific combination of blindness, learning impairment, and autism.
So we fitted up Derek with 32 electrode positions all over his scalp so that they could monitor the electrical activations that emerge.
Linda wants to find out how accurately and how fast Derek's brain is processing music.
I'm going to press the button now and you'll hear the first piece. Ready?
Yes, ready.
So what we set up were 64 small musical phrases taken from the Moonlight Sonata.
That was wrong.
Was that wrong, then?
And in half of these, we inserted an error and asked Derek simply to tell us whether they were correct or not.
Wrong.
Wrong?
That ended in a right note, Angela.
It soon becomes clear that Derek's verbal responses are unreliable.
The most clear-cut thing we found, and it really was very exciting indeed, is that Derek's verbal responses were almost random. But when we looked at his brainwaves, a very, very different story emerged. He was discriminating incredibly clearly.
Each and every wrong note triggers a split-second response in Derek's brain.
That was right. Wrong, Angela.
You want to go with wrong on that? It had a funny note in it there. Did you hear that note? It
was Angela.
Derek's brain processes musical data with total accuracy and enormous speed. And he does this with greater precision and focus than many professional musicians, despite his inability to communicate clearly with language.
He's only interested in music, really. And
okay, so this is a video from PJ Fronda channel, The Musical Genius Derek Parravicini by Channel 5 UK. If you want to listen to it, that's about 46 minutes long. And so, coming back to our insoles, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to be doing for the rest of the day. I think I'll be looking into. Oh, my budget. Yeah, the budget. I'll be looking into the budget because I'm having a hard time adapting to the new budget. The amount of money that I'm earning or that I'm being paid every month now has increased. And for a while, I had to wait to pay my bills, but maybe I can get back into a position where I can pay my bills as soon as I order a product. And I don't have to wait until the visa becomes, you know, payable before I make the payment. I'm not sure yet, but I'm earning, well, the actual numbers are very deceptive because the expenses are there, right? Yeah. My expenses are about $1,400 a month, including food, but my food bill might be going down a little bit this year from $400 a month to an average of $400 a month to about $300 and something a month. I'm not sure yet what the final average will be at the end of December. But I've got enough food now just about for the end of, until the end. Oh, I do have enough until the end of November, I think. So the maximum I'll be paying in food for this year, if I add $400 to the number I've got now, it'll be about $4,600, roughly, which is less than $400 a month. So that would be an achievement. But not only that, I think I'm decreasing because I've just given up sugar very recently. That's going to save money. So I think next year I might get down to something lower, in the lower 300s a month, maybe 360 a month or 370 or maybe even lower, I don't know, per month, which would be good. Maybe 350, or maybe I can get down to 300 a month, but I'm not going to skimp on food. But that does not include supplements. And I, at some point, I will have to work out how much I've bought for, as far as gum, the xylitol gum, which is like a supplement in a way. It's an important hygienic substance that kills the bacteria and prevents cavities. So, but it's expensive, and I chew a lot of it because I want to be sure that I don't, you know, have any cavities caused by the fact that I'm eating food during the day and I don't brush until the end of the day. I brush all at once. I do all my flossing, brushing. I do a lot of things, water pick, in between brushes. All my dental hygiene I do at the end of the day, except for the xylitol gum, which is what I do after every meal. I chew that gum in sufficient quantities, quite a few of, maybe six or seven. Between five and seven pieces of gum I will chew after each meal or each. Sometimes I'll have part of a meal and I'll chew gum, and then I'll have the rest of the meal and chew gum again. So I might have 14 pieces of gum during a meal. But my meals are sort of, you know, they're not definite. They're kind of throughout the day whenever I feel like I need to eat something. So that's the other good news, is I'm not feeling hungry as much all the time. I might be, and I'm getting more exercise. I might be going to lose some more weight, but I don't know yet. But it's possible. I felt like I was at one point, but I want to lose a few more pounds, definitely. I want to get down to where, for one thing, I can wear more of my pants. Is one good thing about that, if I can lose the weight. But it's just better. It's healthier to lose that excess, especially abdominal fat. It's very bad. Vitamin K2 is very powerful, and I've found out, I guess I knew this before, but maybe I can't get the most concentrated form of vitamin K2, but I can get something that's concentrated enough for $32 a day plus tax, I could get more than enough to be the daily requirement for reversing osteoporosis, which they do in Japan. They use 45 milligrams per day as the dose of vitamin K2. That's vitamin K2, which is the menaquinone version of vitamin K, as opposed to phylloquinone, which is K1. This is vitamin K2. 45 milligrams of vitamin K2. In Japan, they use it to reverse osteoporosis. That's how powerful it is. But if I wanted to take 45 grams, or milligrams, I mean, 45 milligrams, what am I taking in terms of... I'm taking micrograms, 100 micrograms, right, a day. Or, I don't know, not per day. I mean per dose, per gel cap. It's 100 per gel cap. I'm talking about per gel cap. I take about 20 of them a day, maybe. But let's just consider one of these gel caps as 0.1 micrograms, roughly. But it's a little more than that. But just for this simple calculation, 0.1. 0.1 milligrams is 100 micrograms. 0.1 milligrams. 45 milligrams would be 450 of these. I'd have to take 450 of those, which I don't want to do because it's ridiculous. I'd have to take all that gelatin in the gel cap as well, which it's not going to be that great an idea to take all that as well. So if I buy the liquid form for $30 a day, I can get more than 45 milligrams. So I think I don't need, so therefore it's probably less than, I think I worked out it might be it's 30 milliliters per drop is 100 micrograms per drop. Yeah, 100 micrograms per drop, 30 milliliters, 20 drops per milliliter. 30 times 20 is 600 drops, times 0.1 is 60 milligrams. So it would be 60 milligrams. So I wouldn't have to take it wouldn't cost me. Well, let's work it out. This is a rough calculation, but we still want to work it out with tangible numbers. 45 divided by 60 times $32. $24 per day times a month, 30 days, let's say, for a month. That would be $720 a month if I wanted to reverse osteoporosis, it would cost me $720 a month. That's pretty economical to reverse osteoporosis, I think. But I don't think I need to reverse osteoporosis, but maybe I do have osteoporosis and don't know it. Because I've always had light bones. I was always told that's why you don't weigh much, because you have light bones, you know. Because I'm 5'9", and I used to weigh 125, and I was 5'9". Now I'm 135, and I'm 5'9". But I'm still told I have light bones, because 135 pounds is nothing, you know. You know, you think you blow away in the wind with that, if you weigh that. So doesn't mean I can't work hard and do heavy work either. I can, but probably I obviously can't lift as heavy of an object as some people can, but I can do heavy work all day long when I'm fit, and when I was young, you know, I could do it. Now I'm hopefully getting back some fitness also, and I'll be able to do that again. But I think that what I need to do is try to see what I can do with vitamin K2. So I'm interested in that. And I'm interested in getting some more Gouda cheese, because Gouda has K2 in it. And it's a natural way to get it as well. It's got calcium, which you need. I mean, the vitamin D that's contained in the liquid K2 is less than the amount I'm getting now. It's less than 1,000. How much was it? 12 micrograms or something? And what is... It would be 400, 500. It's 500 international units with, you know, compared to 100 micrograms of vitamin K2. So it's even more. It'd be more like 600 equivalent of vitamin D, and now I'm getting 1,000. So I'd only be getting 600 units instead of 1,000 that I get now with each gel cap. So, yeah, I'd have to add more vitamin D if I want the same amount of vitamin D, but you can get liquid vitamin D also. I could get the liquid vitamin D and take that if I think I need it, when I need it, and so on. Your body tells you when you need things. apparently I don't need that much vitamin D, though, because when you're taking that much vitamin K2, you don't need that much vitamin D, I guess, and that's why they do it in that ratio. I want to find out if I can get that idea going. But I mean, I'm not going to order 30 days worth, $720, right away, I don't think so. I would want to try it first, so I'll probably order just one unit and try it and see how it goes, and then I might order, depending on that, I'll decide how much to order. That's only one thing I'm working on. We know, those of you who have been listening know that I'm working on many other things, but right now I'm still working on these insoles. So the Danner boots have the moldable sole, thick inserts in them now, the thick insoles made by Sole. And now my feet are not squished. Now, they were squished before and I didn't mind it. It was the most comfortable boot I'd ever worn. Now they're not as comfortable, I feel, because there's too much room in the toe. It doesn't feel like it's as snug, and it's not as perfect a fit. And when I walk, there's not as much cushion. So, no, I'm gonna have to try to find a way to get back to that really good fit in the Danners without squishing my feet. That's one thing I want to get back to, because it's worth it. And I want all my boots to fit equally well, and that's going to be not easy. It's going to be a challenge, and I want to be able to use my boots. So that's what I'll be doing. So this is Ward Green. It's November 20th, 2022, 1757 hours. It's been a pleasure to share these things with you. All the faithful ones, may you continue in your progress in the understanding of the scriptures and the chronology of the Bible, and may you become honest if that is required of your current state. If you're not honest now, then may you become honest in your assessment of the true chronology of the Bible, and may you progress in the understanding of the ancient languages in which the Bible was written as well, and may you enjoy understanding what the Bible tells us as it helps us become aware of how much Jehovah loves us, and thereby builds us up and increases our own self-esteem in a wonderful way. And I'm glad that you've been with me today, and I love you. I want you to continue, if that's your desire, with this study and with this routine that we've been embarking on recently, in recent days. So thank you for watching, listening. Have a wonderful day. Bye for now.